The Agriculture and Natural Resources Appropriations Subcommittee will now come to order. Members, please note Representative Hardy is excused. Adrian, will you please call the roll?
Chair Tomko?
Here.
Vice Chair Rashada Cabrera?
Here.
Representative Botana?
Here.
Brannon?
Here.
Buchanan?
Here.
Chambliss?
Here.
Clemens?
Here.
Fabricio?
Here.
Hardy, excused. McClure?
Here.
Morales?
Present.
Ranking Member Umfroy?
Present.
Representative Roth?
Here.
Stevenson?
Here.
Tant?
Here.
Quorum, L.
A quorum being present, I want to welcome everyone to the Agriculture and Natural Resources Appropriations Subcommittee. Please make sure that all cell phones and other communication devices are turned off or on silent. If members of the public are wishing to address the subcommittee, will you please fill out an appearance form and give it to Adrian, and we will know your interest in addressing the subcommittee. Members, today we have two presentations by DEP, an update on the Florida Forever program, and an overview of the new wastewater grant program. Due to limited time, please hold all questions until the presenter has finished, and I will recognize you then. First up, we have Mara Gambinieri, I'm so sorry if I butchered that, the Deputy Secretary for Land and Recreation, and you are recognized.
Thank you for having me here today to talk about the Florida Forever program. My name is Mara Gambinieri, and I'm the Deputy Secretary for Land and Recreation with the Florida Department of Environmental Protection. Florida Forever is the state's premier conservation and recreation lands acquisition program, our blueprint for conserving Florida's diverse natural heritage for future generations. Florida Forever is authorized by the Florida Forever Act, which was passed by the legislature in 2000 and implemented July 1, 2001. The program has a statewide focus from the Perdido River to Key West and the Atlantic Ocean to the Gulf Coast. Lands acquired under Florida Forever provide a host of benefits like water quality and quantity, resiliency from storm impacts, habitat species protection, and public recreation. Many of these lands become our award-winning state parks, state forests, and wildlife management areas. Protecting Florida's rural working lands preserves the state's character by conserving important water resources and native wildlife. So how does the acquisition process work? Florida Forever project proposals are submitted to DEP's Division of State Lands and then presented to the Acquisition and Restoration Council for approval and ranking. Following annual approval of the Florida Forever priority list and work plan by the Governor and Cabinet, projects and parcels are eligible for acquisition. Currently, there are multiple projects within the acquisition process, the due diligence, valuation, and negotiations phases, and $44 million in contracts are in closing. The pipeline is robust with approximately $437 million in projects in various stages of due diligence, valuation, and negotiation. It is only once we have the approved priority list and work plan from the cabinet that DEP conducts the required due diligence on the parcels, which includes reviewing legal documents, contracting for surveys, appraisals, and negotiating with the landowner. The cost of the required due diligence products depends on the complexity of each project. Acquisitions over $500,000 are taken to the Governor and Cabinet for approval, and once approved, DEP works with the seller and others to complete the closing process. Predictable, consistent funding is key to ensuring we are strategic in our acquisitions and we maintain momentum. Florida Forever Project Ranking is founded on a comprehensive, science-based evaluative process. The Comprehensive Florida Forever Conservation Needs Assessment was developed cooperatively with our partners at the Florida Natural Areas Inventory and includes a series of geographic natural resource data layers for 14 natural resource categories established under the Florida Forever Act. These data feed directly into the scientific review for proposed Florida Forever projects. For decades, project evaluations have incorporated the best available science to inform on ecological greenways, critical linkages, priority wildlife habitats, and critical water resources. Top-ranked projects that meet multiple Florida Forever goals and criterion are given greater consideration for priority ranking. The Florida Forever Priority List and Annual Work Plan guide implementation of the conservation goals of this program. Top-ranked projects on the Florida Forever List, or those ranked high and medium-high, become the work plan. This subset guides DEP's acquisition efforts. The work plan organizes and prioritizes which properties will begin the due diligence process and how much funding is anticipated to be needed, a budget and plan for strategic acquisitions. If opportunities come up from landowners, DEP may still acquire properties outside of the work plan. The Florida Forever List and work plan are developed by the Acquisition and Restoration Council and approved by the Board of Trustees in May of each year. There are 125 projects on the 2021 Florida Forever Priority List. 54 of those projects that were identified as top resource priorities are included in the 2021 annual work plan. $100 million was appropriated for Florida Forever for this fiscal year, and an additional $300 million has been allocated to help acquire lands defined in the new Florida Wildlife Corridor Act. The Florida Wildlife Corridor Act prioritizes conservation for the benefit of wildlife, Floridians, and the economy. It consists of 18 million acres, of which almost 10 million acres have already been conserved. The corridor connects 95 of the 125 projects on the Florida Forever Priority List. This map shows that most of the 54 projects on the current work plan fall within the corridor. You may notice that some important coastal projects, including the Florida Keys, Trail and River Corridor projects, for example, fall outside the wildlife corridor. However, they remain a high priority and are on the work plan for acquisition. By using our proven science and public input processes with the Acquisition and Restoration Council and the Governor and Cabinet approval as the foundation, we are acquiring lands within the corridor and building on the unmatched success of the Florida Forever program. We continue to work with our partners to advance our conservation goals. Since January 2019, DEP's Division of State Lands has closed 237 parcels and spent nearly $195 million to acquire 98,656 acres. 41%, or 40,423 acres, of the acreage acquired has been through conservation easements. Most recently, in September, the Governor and Cabinet approved acquisition of nearly 17,000 acres. Nearly 8,400 of those acres will be acquired through conservation easements, including 6,665 acres within the Kissimmee-St. Johns River Florida Forever Project in Indian River and Okeechobee counties. This property, which is within the Florida Wildlife Corridor, features habitat important for a variety of imperiled wildlife species. Also, 1,661 acres within the Hardy Flatwoods Florida Forever Project. The project is also within the wildlife corridor and contributes to habitat connectivity that is necessary for bears and other wide-ranging species. An additional three acquisitions totaling more than 8,100 acres include 4,381 acres within the Corrigan Ranch Florida Forever Project in Okeechobee County. This project, which is within the wildlife corridor, will provide additional resource-based public recreation opportunities, such as assisting with the completion of the Florida National Scenic Trail, and will expand the acreage of the Kissimmee Prairie Preserve State Park. Also approved in September was 2,115 acres within the Coastal Headwaters Longleaf Forest Florida Forever Project in Santa Rosa County. This acquisition, which closed on September 29th, is within the wildlife corridor and will buffer Whiting Field Naval Air Station from encroachments that might be incompatible with the military mission of this installation. Finally, 1,638 acres within the Devil's Garden Florida Forever Project in Hendry County. This project, which is also within the wildlife corridor, provides habitat critical to panther recovery and long-term survival. That concludes my presentation, but I'm happy to answer any questions you'll have.
Thank you so much for your presentation. Members, do we have any questions? Oh, Representative Stevenson, you are recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. One of the things I notice is there's some very significant, what I consider very significant parcels in the St. Johns County area, for example, where I'm very familiar with it, that don't show up. Is there a map that's more comprehensive that you use for consideration for wildlife connections? We've got 12 Mile Swamp, Anastasia Island State Park, Matanzas Forest, and I think the Guana. And then smaller connections in private from from DRI things and things like that have transferred. Were those considered in the Wildlife Corridors Act?
You're recognized.
Thank you. Thank you for that question. I don't have an additional map here in front of me, but happy to sit down with you and go through the entire 125 list, along with what is a subset that makes up the Wildlife Corridor list as well.
You're recognized, Representative Stevenson.
Thank you. I know that when my constituents look at this, are going to go, where is St. John's County on it? And I would really appreciate that. Even in my own county, there are some mapping issues with connectivity, and I just want to make sure we don't overlook those important opportunities. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Tant, you're recognized.
Thank you. This is probably a newbie question since this is new to me. How long is the general process take when you start with like looking at a particular project until completion, the closing of it? Those, like, you can even differentiate between those on the priority list versus those who are just on the list.
You're recognized.
Thank you. Yes, so the average timeline is 9 months from start to finish. Of course, each project has its complexity, so it really depends, but on average, you're looking at a 9-month cycle.
Representative Roth, you're recognized.
Yes, ma'am. You mentioned a couple things of interest I'd like to ask further on. One of them is you said the 125 projects on the 2021 list. In my opinion, it sounds like we're way behind on funding these projects. We're doing it $100 million a year the last few years. This year we did $400 because we got $300 million from the federal government. Can you give me a ballpark number? You know, is this like several billion dollars, 125 projects that are on that list, what that ballpark number looks like?
You're recognized.
Thank you. We do have about $437 million in projects in the pipeline. I don't have the figure on the total of 125, but my guess is it's probably in the billion-dollar range.
Okay.
Follow up?
Yes,
you're recognized.
Ma'am. Thank you, Chair. So the 54 projects is the number you're talking about that you is $437 million, is that right?
You're recognized.
Thank you. Yes, sir.
Okay. Second question, being that we are underfunded like we are the last few years, is it looks to me like there is more of a focus on these ARC projects, that most of them are conservation easement rather than fee simple, like you were saying, 43% of those 237 parcels.
You're recognized.
Thank you. So we do like to have a healthy mix of fee simple and conservation easements. In the last couple of years, we have had a pretty close to an even split. So fiscal year 19-20 was 52% were conservation easements. 2021 was actually only 15% conservation easements. And then from January 2019 to present, we're at 41% conservation easements. So it all depends on the seller and what they're comfortable with and what our conservation goals for that particular parcel are.
You're recognized.
Thank you. If it would be possible, we could have the more detailed presentation. The presentation you gave is obviously more detailed than what this. If possible, we could have that?
Sure.
Thank you.
Thank you. Members, do we have any more questions? Seeing none, thank you so much, Deputy Secretary Gambinieri. Got it right this time. Thank you for being with us today. And next up, we will have Adam Blaylock, the Deputy Secretary for Ecosystem Restoration. It's good to see you again. Thank you for being here with us, and you are recognized.
Thank you very much. It's very good to be here again. I'm just here to provide an overview of our wastewater grant program. So in 2019, Governor DeSantis created the Blue-Green Algal Task Force, and primary purpose of that was to look at the causes and addressing blue-green algae, particularly harmful blue-green algae blooms. And out of that initial meetings of the Blue-Green Algae Task Force, they put together a consensus document that highlighted some recommendations on ways to do that. And as you can see, one of the things that they explicitly identified was addressing the septic tanks that have particular nutrient impacts to our water bodies. And so the next year in 2020, the legislature passed House Bill 712, which was implemented, or the purpose of that, to implement some of the recommendations of the blue-green algae task force, particularly those that needed statutory direction in order to give authority to implement. And that's in that legislation, it created Section 403-0673, which was the wastewater grant program. And so just to take you through the legislation, like I said, it created a new statutory section and provided both eligibility requirements, things for the department to prioritize types of projects, and then also different considerations for the department to look at when selecting specific projects. And so just for eligibility, the project needs to be in a BMAP, an alternative restoration plan, adopted by final order, or a rural area of opportunity. It also requires 50% match for the project unless it's submitted by a community that is designated as a rural area of opportunity. And then the type of projects that are eligible for funding under this grant program are the connecting septic tanks to central sewer, the construction upgrade or expansion of facilities to provide advanced waste treatment, and then retrofitting of septic tanks to upgrades that allow those septic tanks to reduce nutrients. And priorities that are required as we're looking at different projects are those that subsidize the connection of septic tanks to existing infrastructure, expansion of wastewater collection or transmission facilities constructed concurrently with other construction projects, and then all other connections of septic tanks to wastewater treatment facilities. And lastly, as we're looking at the list of different projects, we'll take into consideration the estimated reduction in nutrient loads, project readiness, effectiveness, overall environmental benefits of the project, the location, particularly if it's like in a spring area, the proximity to the spring vent to see what would be the highest level of nutrient reduction and impact to those areas, and then also the availability of local matching funds and projected water savings or quantity. A lot of times in some of our water quality wastewater projects, particularly looking at expanding of sewer, that also comes with treatment of reclaimed water that can provide benefits on a water quantity side. So looking at being able to get the biggest benefit both from a quality and quantity standpoint. And so this past year, the first year in 2020 that the grant program was established, it didn't get any funding, but last year the legislature appropriated $116 million out of state funding, and then it also appropriated another $408 million that was part of the federal money that was the same federal funds that you heard for the wildlife corridor funding. And then one of the really good things about this grant program and our ability to have the consistent funding and allowing us to plan for big projects and multi-year projects was the amendment to the documentary stamp statute that allowed for this program to have that recurring funding. So depending on the doc stamp collection from year to year, you know, it can go up and down, but roughly right now looking at continuing around that $116 million per year. And just to kind of go through this year, we identified 16 projects that totaled 114 of that $116 million. It created 318,000 pounds of total nitrogen reduction, removed over 4,500 septic tanks, removed 47,000 pounds of phosphorus per year, and also created 8.2 million gallons per day of advanced waste treatment capacity. And that is the end of my presentation. If you have any questions on any of that, be happy to answer them.
Thank you so much for your presentation. Members, do we have any questions? Representative Tant, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In terms of the 16 grants that were awarded, who are the typical recipients of those grants?
You're recognized.
Chair, thanks. This year, we really wanted to focus, given that we also knew we had the additional $500 million on the federal funding to address areas in the Indian River Lagoon, because through our BMAP process, we knew that Those are areas where we are seeing nutrient impacts directly related from septic tanks, a lot of septic tanks in a close proximity, and being able to very strategically identify large projects that can get a lot of nutrient reductions at one point allowed us to highlight that area and see what we're hoping will be some significant improvements in water quality there. We also looked at Orange County and Wakaiba Springs, an area that we know has increased nutrient impacts, and Orange County has been doing very heavy lift in providing, identifying projects in septic to sewer, and this was a subsequent phase of some multi-phase projects that we've been funding in the past in cooperation with the county. And then lastly, one that was funding a septic to sewer project in Gibsonton, which is right on the boundary of Tampa Bay, that was also had for the cost significant nutrient reductions going into Tampa Bay.
Representative Roth, you are recognized.
Thank you, Chair. First is kind of a philosophical question, then I'll ask a specific question, if that's okay, Chair. So the first question is, obviously, this is a brand new program. We just passed the redistribution for Dr. May's stamp tax last year. Great bill. But in this wastewater grant program, I'm hoping that we have some great other programs that we can model this after. Obviously, we have a five-year DOT plan. We have a ARC priority list, which we just talked about 10 minutes ago in DEP. So there is a, you know, ranking of projects high, medium, and low, and they're on the list, and it takes time to go through the process. And if you don't get it this year, you will eventually get it if it's a great project. Can you give us a little insight? I guess you're in the middle right now of trying to come up with the protocol for the how to do the grant funding.
Yes, thank you, Chair. And the statute, it did provide a lot of that criteria, saying these are the type of projects that are eligible, and then the criteria for prioritizing and the considerations. A lot of the considerations are things that we would do anyway, looking whether it's in a BMAP, because we know at that point when a BMAP's been established, it's an impaired water body. Science has been done to model and identify all the different load allocations and who are the different sources of nutrients, whether it's septic tanks, stormwater, agriculture. And so if we're in an area that's got a BMAP, we know what is the significance of septic tanks and whether, so that allows us to be very strategic in where we pick projects. And so that's been good. And just having now that assurance of consistent funding allows us to do these multi-phase, multi-year projects. So it's helpful.
You're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. So appreciate what you said about, you know, BMAP plans and others. So you are collecting other data and trying to overlay maps and all that kind of stuff. It's called GIS. Mm-hmm. You know, we are overlaying onto a map of the state of Florida. So that's great. So the specific question is more to the location of a project. So is there some, I guess there's some effort being made to try to prioritize, you know, septic to sewer conversions, where you know, where they are, you know, and what areas need to be prioritized. Because we've talked about this over the years. We've talked about the Indian River Lagoon. We've talked about, you know, releasing sewage into Indian River Lagoon, a million gallons and all that kind of stuff. So I think this is something the legislature is very interested in, is trying to help prioritize these conversions. Can you comment on that a little bit, please?
You recognize.
Yeah, no, thank you for that. And we do, I mean, take the Orange County project. The reason that one we knew was a really good project was it was very close to the spring vent for Wakaiba Springs, and we knew compared to another project that might be, you know, 2 miles away, and by being able to understand the hydrology of an area, it allows us, our scientists that look at all of this and looking at how the nutrient loading from removing the septic tanks that penetrate go into the groundwater, and then able to see exactly whether or not it would provide a big benefit. And also similar with surface water areas like Indian River Lagoon or, you know, Peace River, or Apalachicola River, any of the surface waters, if there's a bunch of septic tanks that are in close proximity and we know the flow of that groundwater as it seeps in and can percolate into the nearby surface water, being able to address and identify projects that are going to have that impact.
Representative Roth, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. I apologize for this question, but if you can keep it simple, just in the future, we'd like when you're making some progress and you're coming up with priorities and you're trying to kind of put it on a map of Florida, you know, it's very much something we're all interested in, trying to understand how DEP is trying to move forward and take care of our water body. So if there is some type of prioritization or, you know, this, you know, these are the 25 different areas in the state of Florida and this is kind of how we're looking at it, that'd be very much appreciated. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. And I can also get you a map that shows all of our BMAP areas so you can see where those are, and those would be ones that would be qualify at least under this and give you an idea of where that would be.
Great. Representative Stevenson, you are recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is a really exciting project, and I, being an accountant, I really love the annual reduction because we all know how that adds up over time. When you're setting the priorities, do you ever consider, when you invest, there's places in crisis, and there's also places where maybe sometimes a prevention is less expensive than cure. Are we able to allocate some resources to, you know, keeping water bodies that aren't yet in a tipping point from going over?
You're recognized.
Thank you for that. And, you know, trying to maintain water quality in areas where there's no impairment, you know, is something that we do look at as we're looking at different projects. I mean, really it depends on, you know, the amount of funding available and trying to address areas where we are seeing environmental, you know, impacts. But that's not to say that we're not continually sampling and monitoring water bodies regardless of their impairment. And if we start seeing trends moving in a different direction, then we start reaching out to different stakeholders.
You're recognized for a follow-up.
Thank you. I've seen some of the preservation projects. Are there any that you can point to, maybe a smaller water body where we've been able to turn it back so that it's now, you know, recovered? There was a little lake that we were working on that had, they were using gizzard shads and all kinds of remedies. Do we have any full success stories we can point to?
You're recognized.
Yes, ma'am. Yeah, I mean, one of the main ones is Wakulla Springs. It was one that had significant impairment, and with a lot of, and there's ones that we're looking at some additional septic to sewer projects to fund this year, and we feel pretty confident based on the modeling that doing with that significant investment in wastewater in that area that it's going to be very close, if not achieving the TMDL over the next couple of years. And that's one that has really been a success story, and Wakulla County has been very good partner in addressing and identifying septic tanks, City of Tallahassee, and doing their advanced waste treatment or removing the spray field. I mean, there's been a lot of investment, and it shows that when that is done, that there can be improvement. It just does take time.
Yep. One more.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. I just think one of the things that's hard is we fund things, and it does take time to reverse trends and kind of treat what's going on. And, you know, it's the repetitive, the continued progress is important to the people of Florida. So thank you very much for your work. Thank you, Madam Chair.
You're welcome. Representative Morales, you're recognized for a question.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I have a question, and thank you for your presentation. It's very interesting how we're working towards eliminating nitrogen and all the concept that you just put together. My question is, how does this, if I have citizens in my district that want to find ways to fix their sewage, the septic tank to sewage, how can they easily go into the website? Is it user-friendly, the website? Because sometimes we do have language barriers, we have conflicts, we don't know how to navigate the system, so I wanted to bring that up. Is there an easy way to access the website, and is it user-friendly?
You're recognized.
Thank you, and yeah, our over the last couple years, we've been making a lot of improvements on the usability of the website, particularly as we're looking at our grant programs and the ability to have a simple process for submitting applications, understanding what the grants are qualify for, the type of projects, and then our staff being, you know, always willing and able to assist those that are submitting projects, help them through that process and identifying the information that they need. So.
You're recognized for follow-up.
So do they reach out to the office for navigate the system, or is it that you can provide? Because, like, for my sake, can you send me an example of how I can navigate the process? Because if I would understand it, then it would make it easier for those who don't, that I can share that information with.
Yes, ma'am.
Could we share that?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Umfroy, you're nope. Representative Tant, you have a question?
Yes, Madam Chair, thank you. First of all, I want to say thank you for the work you're doing. I live in Tallahassee, so I'm very grateful for our septic to sewer work that we've done. Septic to sewer, sorry about that. Quick question. In regards to the blue-green algae task force and all the work that we have already done, what remains to be done from that task force do you expect after this?
Thank you.
You're recognized.
Yeah, I know the blue-green algae task force is going to be continuing to be meeting, looking at different issues. I think they last was looking at, like, stormwater, particularly with the agency in the beginnings of doing the additional more stringent stormwater rules that was also part of 712. And, you know, there are a lot of different issues pertaining to sources and how to address that. They recently also looked at, like, the innovative tech program and kind of looking at what we've been able to do with that and what other innovative technologies are out there for addressing blue-green algae. So it will continue to meet, and I don't have any specific information on kind of what's the next meeting is going to be on, but they will be continuing to address different issues as they come up.
Representative Umfroy, you're recognized.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. Appreciate it. My question, sir, is in reference to, I heard about rural sewer to septic. I live in a very urbanized area, and I had a meeting yesterday with a city that's not in my area, but it's in Miami-Dade. And they are concerned about converting to from sewer to septic. And it may have missed me, but does this program, can they also apply to this program even though they're not rural?
You're recognized.
Thank you. Looking at the, I kind of brought the definition and statute for what that rural area of opportunity is, and just want to see. It really does pertain to rural areas, counties with population less than 75,000, or a county of population of 125,000 or fewer if they're adjoining a county that's 75,000. So, but if they're in a BMAP or restoration area, they would still be able to qualify.
You're recognized for a follow-up.
Thank you very much, Chair. Do we have, and you did give an additional, but do we have any programs for community? Because I live in Broward in the South Florida area, mm-hmm. and we're built up, you know? It is what it is. But we still have pockets that need assistance. Mm-hmm. Are there any other programs or maybe even a small grant program that we could probably look at for the future to assist with those areas? Because though we might be populated, we have double-digit poverty and economic issues that we need assistance with, just like any other community within our state that may be economically constrained. So just because we have these large populations, we may not have the resources to actually assist the way we need to. Mm-hmm. And so I just wanted to bring that up. Thank you, sir.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. Members, do we have any more questions? Seeing none, thank you so much, Deputy Secretary Blaylock, for being with us again. And we do have a member from the audience that would like to testify, Chloe Kuperger with Martin County. You're recognized.
Hi, everybody. My name is Chloe Siu-Perger, pretty close. I work for Martin County and the Board of County Commissioners. And I just want to come up here and say that this conversation is really exciting. This is the topic I nerd out on. It's one of our biggest priorities. So for some background, Martin County about 3-4 years ago came up with Connect to Protect. We're right on the Indian River Lagoon. So our goal is 10,000 septic tank units converted to sewer in 10 years. Everyone thought we were nuts, but we're actually on track because of awesome partnerships like this. And so also just for more background, it's one thing to put the infrastructure in, but it's another thing to incentivize connection. You can't force people, especially when it's a $20,000 overhead cost, right? So the Board of County Commissioners put up $4 million annually to match the state on grant dollars so that we can get that connection cost under 11, under $8 million for some community, or $8 million, $8,000 per household, so that it's an actual feasible thing. And this conversation is really awesome. Partnerships like this are really great between the local and state government. I know we have our differences, but this is one of those positives. And I think Representative Roth hit the nail on the head. Oftentimes, we're all very political about our water projects, trying to fight for dollars and cents here and there. I think the conversation about organizing water infrastructure the way we do our road infrastructure and even land acquisition, et cetera. I mean, water is the lifeblood of our state. So that's a really exciting conversation. And you all participating on it on that level is just, it's really awesome to see. So I just want to thank you all. I want to thank DEP. And I hope you move forward with this wastewater program when it comes to budget cycle. So thank you.
Thank you for being with us. All right, members, this concludes our committee agenda. I would like to point out that our vice chair is celebrating her birthday tomorrow. So if you could please wish her a happy birthday. We will not be singing. Y'all don't want to hear me. But seeing no other further business, Representative Buzada Cabrera moves that we rise. And without objection, our meeting is adjourned.